Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you since 1997 on KKUP Radio with over 250 guests and still going strong in their 12th year of weekly broadcasting, the International Taz and Paula Show brings to you expansive, engaging, and groundbreaking intensity on radio and now on the internet airwaves today. Listen live every Thursday or visit Embracing Mother Earth's archives, exclusive articles, ask questions, and receive actual answers from guests anytime at TazandPaulaShow.com. Taz and Paula's special guests are experts coming from all walks of life, energizing our lives with a passion that inspires and teaches us with each of their compelling personal life journeys, with roots from ancient wisdom and bridging it with modern science. We hope today's show touches the wisdom of your heart. And now, Taz and Paula.
Well, good morning, everybody out there. One of the world's most revered spiritual teachers, Swami Kriyananda, the last stilling teaching disciple of Parahansa Yogananda, is, at 84, a man of perpetual action and engagement with society. Widely recognized as one of the world's foremost authorities on meditation and yoga, he has taught these principles and techniques to hundreds of thousands of students around the world. Originally born J. Donald Walters in Telahan, Romania, but raised in the Northeast, Swami underwent a powerful spiritual transformation in 1948 upon reading the autobiography of a yogi. He did this at the age of 22. So we're going to have quite a show today. You are listening to the Taz and Paula Show. And I'm Paula.
Taz, greetings. Our guest today, Swami Kriyananda.
Yeah, bravely, I have to say.
is a direct disciple of the great master Parahansa Yogananda and is an internationally known author, lecturer, and composer. He is an advocate of simple living and high thinking and has authored more than 140 books, folks, covering a wide range of subjects that emphasize the need to live wisely by one's own experience of life and not by abstract theories or dogmas. A composer since 1964, Swami has written over 400 musical works. His music is inspiring, soothing, and uplifting, and many of his later albums are instrumental works with brief affirmations or visualizations. Chuck Dilberto of the Awareness magazine says, "His words and music are full of his life and light. His sole intention is to heal, something we could all use during these chaotic times." Through Crystal Clarity Publishers, Swami's works have sold over 3 million copies worldwide and have been translated into over 25 languages. Paula, my question to Swami today is going to be, do you sleep?
That's a good question. Actually, what I do in order to get so much done is bring the power of concentration, which I've gained through meditation. So I can do work that other people would take much longer in, and I can do it very quickly. For example, last spring, in an idle moment, I picked up The Wizard of Oz, thinking I'd read it, and I got to the Yellow Brick Road, which is right at the beginning of the book, and suddenly I had the inspiration to write a children's book. And I wrote 180 pages in 2 weeks. So this concentration is what really accomplishes it. Plus age, I'm nearly 85.
Wow. Well,
one thing before we go any further, because I absolutely endorse your efforts to bring about equality between women and men. At Ananda, we have as many women in positions of authority as we have women, as we have men.
Well,
So I applaud your effort.
Well, I want to say to you, Swami, is I think we all need to learn the power of concentration in this chaotic time. It's hard to
Absolutely. To
concentrate. So is that part of your teachings?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. You know, we're distracted by so many things. If you can keep your mind on what you're doing, then you can really become something. But otherwise, you're torn in 1,000 directions, and 75, 85 years go by, and you wonder, what have I done with my life?
So you have a new class. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I think a lot of people really think that, we wonder what we've done with our life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I made up my mind as a youngster that I wanted my life to be useful. And I've really dedicated it to that purpose. I didn't want to live only for myself. I wanted to live in such a way that other people would benefit too.
Now, at the age of 22, what were you doing just before you went to study?
I was seeking truth. I sought it from the age of, from all my life, but mainly from the age of 13. Even at the age of 15, I first had the idea of founding communities, but I wasn't at an age when I could have done it. But I've now founded 8 communities in the world, and about 1,000 people live in them. But this was when I came to the autobiography of a yogi, it was after intense seeking. What is God? Is there a God? I wasn't at all sure there was. But his book absolutely changed my life. I took the next bus from New York to Los Angeles. And the first words I addressed to him were, I want to be your disciple. Words that would have been inconceivable to me 1 week earlier.
And how long did you study with him?
I was with him the last 3.5 years of his life.
And
this was 1948. He passed away in 1952.
Oh, wow. What an honor to be there during that time.
It was. It absolutely was. My life is dedicated to helping people to know who he was and to appreciate it.
What was it like when you first met him? I mean, that he accepted you as his disciple, and what were your feelings at that time?
Paul, to tell you the truth, I was so desirous of being accepted that I had no time for impressions. I was just praying mentally, I know you know my thoughts, you've got to accept me.
Well, you've written a screenplay about his life, haven't you?
Yes, I have. It'll be not a play. Yeah, a screenplay, that's right. And we're going to start recording it this year. And we hope to find some major actors for it.
Since you have written so much music as well, I really wondered, what musical instrument? Do you have a favorite one?
Well, I used to study piano. I studied and practiced it for years and hours every day even. So the piano was the main thing. But then singing also. I had a singing teacher when I was 18, and her desire for me was to become a very well-known singer, but I had no such desire. I wanted to know truth.
So what was it like when you were with Paramahansa Yogananda those years? I mean, what was it like? What surprised you?
It was absolutely amazing from moment to moment. I never saw, for example, in his eyes or in his speech or in anything, I never saw the least touch of ego consciousness. He was there to help people. He could be stern, but he also had an absolutely marvelous sense of humor. I remember how he laughed when he repeated the saying, your teeth are like stars, they come out at night. And he had a delicious sense of humor.
And I would think that whoever was around him would learn the simplicity of life and how magical that is.
I suppose everybody has to learn according to his own capacity. I don't say I have full capacity. There must be great depths that I myself didn't plumb. But I've tried to share what I did understand.
Then, well, when afterwards, you actually, I think you went to Sacramento first, or and started Ananda.
Oh, his organization and I came to a parting of the ways in 1962, and they couldn't handle my creativity, I'm afraid. Anyway, from then on, I was able to do the work that he had told me to do, because he told me to write, and he had wanted communities, and he wanted me to lecture and so on. So I was able to do all these things much more. So I started Ananda. It's 80 miles northeast of Sacramento in Nevada County, near Nevada City, but in California. And I started that in 1968-69.
And was that the first one?
That was the first one, right. Now we have 8, as I think I said.
Right, because we're really familiar with the one that is in Palo Alto.
Oh, well, that's a very good one, too. I hated to start that one, I'll have to tell you, because the person I put in charge there was my secretary, and she was such a good secretary, but I knew it was her destiny to teach, so I put her there.
Well, it's a beautiful place. We've enjoyed going there many times.
When people go from there to Ananda Village, they're in awe. So I have to say that, too. Ananda Village is much bigger. It's about 1,000 acres. And people have their own homes there. Palo Alto is a city center, but Ananda is out in the country. And we're able to develop much more perfectly the ideals that I've had.
Do they grow their own vegetables and things like that?
Yes. And I think, Paula, that we're coming to a time of very serious depression when people won't have the food to eat. I think the best thing people can do, and this is what I urgently recommend, and the beauty of Ananda is that it's in its 43rd year, so we can say we know what we're talking about. But communities are going to be the solution of the future. A few people getting together, buying land, and growing their own food, building their own homes. People need community, and some people could do it on their own, but very few. So I urge people, get together with others, build communities. I think this ideal will spread like wildfire.
Well, there certainly will, I could see in the future, as you say, that there would be a food shortage, possibly, and we'll need to do that.
Yes, absolutely.
You have a new, I don't think it's new, because it sounds like you've been teaching it for a long time, a class coming. It's called 6 Weeks to Lasting Success and Happiness.
Well, this is the first time I'm giving this class.
Okay.
Actually, what happened is it's interesting, because I was in India a few years ago, and I was in the hospital, barely conscious. I had double pneumonia. And a doctor came into my room, and he said, "Sir, can you help me?" Well, there I was, almost conscious, and he wanted me to help him. But I said, "Well, okay, try." So he said, "Well, I have a son in college in Canada, and I have many expenses. How is it possible to be successful and yet always toe a strict moral line?" And I answered him that in my life I found that I've succeeded much better by being following rigidly the principles of right action. And I'm afraid I wasn't a good advertisement for success at that moment. He left the room skeptically, but the next day I decided I had to write a course on this. So I spent the next year and a half writing this course, and on the basis of that course is what I'm giving these classes now.
Oh, Do you think it's really important for this class to be out right now because of what we're all going through?
I think that is exactly the timing for it. And I really feel this year is going to see the economy unfurl. I tell you, my guru, Yogananda, said that money will not be worth the paper it's printed on. Already they're printing huge amounts of dollars. It can't go on. And what will people do when the money they have? You know, in Germany in 1923, when they had hyperinflation, somebody took his paycheck, his pay for the week, in a wheelbarrow to a store, and he thought, well, nobody's going to want this stuff. So he went into the store. But when he came out, he found the money strewed all over the street. Somebody had stolen his wheelbarrow.
The wheelbarrow was more important than the money.
Exactly.
Well, when you read the autobiography of a yogi when you were 22, what was in that book that stimulated you? Was there any one particular thing, or was there several, or can you share that?
Tell you, I had been totally against the idea of miracles, so I had to put those miracles on a shelf. I mean, page 8 of Autobiography of Yogi, and he's page 8, somebody materializes in a wheat field, and this was a little beyond me. What absolutely won me to that book was the perfection of his reactions to everything, his attitude in every circumstance. It was so beautiful that it just completely won me to him as my teacher.
Well, I can remember reading it, and some of the areas in the book were, it was just how he accepted it nonchalantly, the life that was there and the steps that it took, and the simplicity of it was really what I remember, just how he related.
Moving, isn't
to people.
It?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I read that he was a vegetarian. Immediately I gave up eating meat. I haven't eaten meat ever since, 63 years ago. And he said he was a monk. Immediately I decided, all right, I'll be a monk. I just completely, everything he did, I said I would do. And the next day, I took the next bus to California.
Do you think he knew you were coming?
Yeah. I lived out in Scarsdale.
Now, have you actually seen miracles yourself?
I'm sorry?
Have you seen miracles since then? I mean, since you've
Yes, I certainly have, with him and in life in general. God is closer to us than people realize, and he will do many things for you if you give him a chance, because he loves us. So, yes, I have seen many.
Can you share some of them with us, Swami?
Well, one with him was we were working on plastering a building, and the plaster was old and it was setting up, and I had just poured a new bunch on the board when Yogananda drove by and stopped his car and called to us. So we came down to talk with him, and he must have talked to us for an hour. And of course I was very happy to talk with him, but I just was thinking in the back of my mind, now I'm going to have to take a sledgehammer to that plaster. And anyway, after he left, we went back, the plaster was soft, and had no more trouble with it the whole rest of the day. Well, this is the kind of thing that happened around him all the time, and he never said anything, but it just happened. One time, there was he had a guest, I don't know how many guests, I would estimate about 10, and this was down in Encinitas, and they had a carrot juice processing plant. So he asked one of the monks to go down and get some of that carrot juice to share with the guests. And they came back and they said, well, sir, there's only enough for about half of one glass. We can't give it to 10 people. But I said, never mind, bring that much. And so they brought it. And from that, he said, start pouring. And they kept pouring and pouring and pouring. They filled 10 glasses. And there was still the same amount of carrot juice in the glass. So this kind of thing, you just got used to it with him. And in my own life, I can say, because I'm a much more average person, but I always think of God as my divine mother. I feel that the mother aspect of God is more compassionate, and I need all the compassion I can get. So anyway, I felt inspired by Divine Mother to go back to India. And 2 weeks before my supposed departure, I had enough money to go and stay about 2 months. But 2 weeks before, I was driving into San Francisco, and my car threw a rod, and I realized I couldn't keep it. But I needed a car up where I live in the mountains, and so I said, well, what shall I do? And I didn't get any answer from Divine Mother. So I said, well, Divine Mother, my common sense tells me that I'll need a car when I come back. So I'm going to have to get a car. And if you still want me to go to India, you'll have to reimburse me. So I bought the car. I spent $1,100 on the car on Friday evening. The next Monday morning, I got a letter from somebody I didn't know, and it contained a check for $1,000. And the covering letter said, use this as Divine Mother wants you to. Now, how many people in America think of God as their Divine Mother?
Oh, wow. That was...
That definitely is, you know, that there's some huge helping hands above.
Yeah. And I've just found that the more you live for God, the more thrilling life becomes. Sometimes I can hardly stand it. It's so beautiful.
Well, it sounds like that we can make time stand still at times. Sometimes, you know, from some of the stories I've heard, that we can just make time stand still and enjoy the moment.
Yes. Yeah, one thing that self-help people so often leave out is the factor of God. They think they're doing it all by themselves. I managed to do quite a few things by myself before I thought of God, but now I see that he was there anyway behind the scenes. I know when I was in college, I didn't go to Greek class, and in preparing for the exam, the professor said, of course, there are some people here who might as well not even show up for the exam, and everybody would look at me and laugh. And I just decided I would pass, and I remember a week before, I picked up the book, and I thought, oh, what a bore, and I put it down, until finally, the night before the exam, I thought, oh, my God, tomorrow I've got this exam. I still plan to pass it, but I haven't studied anything. And so they say that necessity is the mother of invention. Well, she showed the right motherly instincts in that moment. I told myself, you're a Greek. Well, as soon as I thought of myself as a Greek, it came much more naturally to think in Greek. And so I read the book, the grammar book and so on, for an hour intensely, but it was all absorbing stuff that I already sort of knew. And, you know, the exam was unusually difficult. Only two people passed it, but I was one of them.
I bet you shocked the instructor. Now, in your six-week course, how do people learn how to enjoy life? I mean, I'm assuming that course is to help people enjoy life moment by moment, like what we're talking about right now.
It will also help them to know, and this is a very important point. There's a Sanskrit saying, yada dharma statajaya. Where there is right action, there lie victory, success, happiness, everything. So if you act rigidly, the reason we're coming into a depression is that people have cut corners and they've been too avaricious. But if they will act this way, they can sail through this depression much more easily. So I'm going to talk about right action. I'm going to talk about how to attract what you need when you need it. I'm going to talk about inspiration and getting guidance from your higher self. I know many people are atheists, so let me address them in saying that somebody in Australia once came to me after a talk, and he said, well, I see you've used the word God a lot. I'm an atheist. What have you got to say that'll impress me? And how can you define God in such a way that I can accept it? And I said, well, why don't you think of God as the highest potential you can imagine for yourself? And he looked quite surprised, and he said, well, I can certainly live with that. Well, this is important, and inspiration is important in life. All music that is written without inspiration is just putting pieces of notes together, and they don't work. And you notice in many songs, the first two lines are beautiful, and then the composer sort of loses his inspiration, and it peters out, and it's no longer beautiful. So then again, the importance of right attitude. It's very important to have the right attitude toward what you do. Success consciousness has one set of results. Problem consciousness has another. And then what is it to be practical? Well, do that which really works. And first things first, realize the most important things in life, what they are. So these are the points I'm going to be covering in this course.
And it's going to be available on a broadcast for people that can actually go through the class at home?
Well, they can get it online.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the way you get it is to contact AnandaLA.org. Ananda, A-N-A-N-D-A-L-A for Los Angeles, .org. And Ananda means divine joy or bliss.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. Well, certainly, you must be excited. This is the first time that you have taught in, 40 years. So what stimulated you to want to do this class?
Well, I felt that this would be a subject that is needed right now, as I've said several times already, that we're coming into a serious depression. I want to help people to know how to face it.
And it's going to be worldwide, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. And I have a friend in the room right here who's from Spain. She says things are very bad there. And they're going to be much, much worse here in America. I can imagine a time when trucks with food won't be able to get into the inner cities because they'll be stopped by rioting mobs outside the cities. Yogananda one time, and he was a prophet as well as a miracle worker, and he said one time when City Hall demanded something outrageous, like maybe sprinkler system where it wasn't needed, that kind of thing. And he sort of jokingly said, there ought to be a revolution. Then he paused a moment and he said, there will be one. So we're in for some rocky times. Plus, there are 35,000 atomic weapons stockpiled in the world, and those are only the known weapons. If one person drops one, do you think that'll end it? No. I think, as I said, times ahead of us are not going to be easy. Another interesting fact is that the magnetic pole is shifting now 40 miles a year. and it could be 400. It could be much faster. It's accelerated already to 40. So Yogananda one time in Hollywood Church paused, and he cried with great power, "You don't know what a terrible cataclysm is coming." We must take words like that seriously.
I wonder, though, Swami, if perhaps there will be a shift more in people's minds. And, you know, we're hooked up to Mother Earth through
all
our senses.
You know, Mother Earth sometimes needs to shake off fleas like a dog.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, we are our mental, I mean, our shifting of our brain and how we think and that kind of thing.
Okay, you know what I think, Paula? We need to individually feel that attunement with Mother Earth, whether our attunement can overbalance that of millions who think differently is the basic question we're asking here. But I do believe that the more we respect the world, the more we feel that it is a living planet giving us something, and we should give in return. In India, they have this feeling that you should pour a little water out on the earth before you take your meal in order to give nourishment back when you've received it. These are important principles. Appreciation, I think, is the basic divine attitude that we should assume toward life. Appreciation and gratitude.
So I think what Taz is trying to say is, can we shift this just by acting in that direction and being grateful?
If out of 6 billion people, 1 billion were to do that, fine. I think we all should try. But I don't see those 6 billion doing it, and I see that we're at the point of no return now. But I could be wrong. I don't insist, but I must say that this is what I expect.
I kind of look at this, Swami, as Paramahansa Yogananda really relaxed with it, and I kind of think it's like maybe more like the 100th monkey, and you know, people will catch on. They will feel the love from others, and I just, you know, maybe it's the great faith in me that I have, but I do see, you know, and feel that we have that capability to create that miracle so that we can help each other and be there and support and to ease what will be set before us.
Well, you know, there's wishful thinking, there's hopeful thinking, and there's sometimes not quite in tune with those realism. And if you've got a car careening down a mountainside and you try to stop it just moments before it reaches the bottom, that's wishful thinking. If you try to stop it halfway down, you may succeed. But it depends on where we are on that mountainside.
Okay.
Well, hopefully, we're in the middle and we're able to slow it down anyway.
Well, I appreciate very much your desires here. I, too, am doing my best. But I have this expectation. I want people to be prepared for the worst. Then if the best comes, all the better.
Yes.
There were predictions back in the 80s that huge things were happening, but they didn't happen. So we can hope and pray.
Well, I can actually imagine that the mountain is growing taller.
Okay, I won't argue.
Okay.
Not something I desire.
Well, things that were told to me 20 years ago, I thought, oh, yeah, right. And now they're happening. So that's proof to me.
Yeah.
And probably everyone else was like the way I was, you know, that's not really going to happen, so I'm not going to take action.
Okay, well, I take action because I think it's good to have a pillow before you land at the bottom of the mountain.
Okay, a big pillow. You have written your latest book, The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yes.
And it has just won 2 prestigious book awards. And you are introducing it to people in California, to Ananda. And how is this going along with your plan after writing the book?
Well, I haven't any plans at all, really. I mean, here I am, 85 nearly, and it's more time for me to try to share whatever bliss I can with people and not worry about projects.
So is it about, I mean, do you teach yoga or do you share the classes? You're sharing meditation?
I teach yoga. I teach the meditation aspect, not the physical. I mean, nowadays I need help to cross the room.
Well, you're doing quite a bit for needing help.
Yeah, I guess so. I figure as long as I'm able to breathe, I might as well do something and try to make it helpful.
Well, you're doing, amazingly, spreading the light, I should say, and the joy. And we really appreciate all the things that you're doing right now.
Oh my gosh.
I tell you, it's been my joy to serve.
So have you, you said you were in India with pneumonia. Have you been traveling much in the last few years?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be in India right now, but these movies have kept me in Los Angeles. And I would like to go back to India. I had just the day before I left India to come to Italy and then America, I had a prophecy, which was a very ancient one, but it said that I would live another 7 years. So we'll see. I have to say that travel is hard on me.
Oh.
But nonetheless, I would like to go back to India. At the age of 6 months, I traveled for the first time from Romania to America, and I, obviously with my parents, but I haven't stopped since.
Now, can you give us a little hint who's going to be, what actors are going to be in the film?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell us or give us a hint who's going to star in your film?
Who's going to?
Star.
Star. Oh, no, we don't know yet, but we're going to work on it very soon, and we're hoping a few major actors will be a part of it.
So will this be
will be in it, too.
Will this be in major theaters, or?
Well, we hope so.
Oh, let's keep our fingers crossed. It sounds like it's going to be a great movie.
Yeah.
How long?
The subject that's needed today.
Pardon me?
I think it's a subject that's needed today. Yogananda came with a world mission. It's time the people knew about it.
Yeah, I know. Like in the mainstream for people that, a lot of people have studied him, but I think it's time for more people to see what everything's, what he's done.
Yeah, so many people think of him as an authority figure and so on. He was so charming and so human, and yet not human in an egoic sense, but in the sense of charm, humility, kindness, love for people, forgiveness. I remember him mentioning one person, this was a funny one, the person had written him a scathing letter of criticism. And the next time the master saw him, he said, you ought to take up writing. That was the best letter Satan has ever written me.
Now, this is going to be a strange question, but are you able to talk to him now?
I talk to him, and I do think I get some kind of reply. Do I see him face to face? I do not.
But he comes in through your thoughts, probably.
Yes, yes.
And do you ask for his help when you're writing or
I never write without asking his help and guidance. And I think that's one reason I've been able to do so much.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, do you write each day?
No. Many days I don't do anything. Today I plan to sleep a bit. And you know, I'm in Hawaii right now, and I've got a blood clot and a staph infection, four-plus staph infection I've had. So I'm a little bit incapacitated physically. I hope to go back to the mainland next Monday.
Well, I'm amazed that you're able to be with us today. With all, you
oh
must
gosh,
be feeling
yeah.
under the weather.
Well, I'm just happy to be with you. I really am.
Thank you for taking the time. You know, just to gathering the energy to be on the phone with us, that's tremendous, you know. I was going to say we have about 20 minutes more. Can you share some wonderful stories that people would enjoy listening to?
You want me to talk more?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
As
well,
long as
no,
you have the energy.
There was one time in, I was in India, and I wanted to go to Calcutta, and I didn't have any specific job, so I could just share my voyage with God. And I didn't, every thought, every step I took, I was sharing with God. And when I went from Delhi to Calcutta, the one regret that I had was that a friend of mine, he was Indian, who had been to UC Davis. He'd gone back to India, and I didn't have his address. And I knew that he lived fairly near to Calcutta, down in Orissa, another state, and Bhubaneswar. Anyway, the one regret I had going there was that I didn't have that address. So anyway, when I landed, I was expecting people to meet me, and they had been caught in traffic and were late. And I, instead of doing the thing that usually people do, was rush to the nearest phone and find out what's happening, be frantic about it, I just stood there and I thought, Divine Mother, what have you got in mind for me? Just at that moment, somebody stopped and he said, what is your good name? And I told him, that's the way they always say, what is your good name? And so I told him my name. He said, oh, I thought it must be you. I have some photographs that a friend of mine showed me, and you're in them. And I said, what is your friend's name? He said, this is Dr. Mishra, the man I'd been wanting to see. I said, well, I've wanted to know how to meet him. And he said, I've come to Calcutta just properly to meet him, because he's staying here right now. So I'll take you to his residence. And so I got to spend the night there. It turned out that all the hotels were filled that night. But the next day I was able to get in contact with my friends, and everything worked out just perfectly. But it's amazing how when you put your life in God's hands, everything just, it works out perfectly. So again and again I have seen that the most practical thing a person can do is put his life in God's hands. The best technique you can follow basically in life is share your every thought with God. Don't talk about him. Don't say he or she or whatever, but you. And you will find that God comes very close that way. You know, Frank Laubach wrote a beautiful book, Letters of a Modern Mystic, in which he talks about doing this practice. I got to meet him and have lunch with him 6 months before he passed on. And it was inspiring. But this practice is something everybody can do. And the beautiful thing, which he points out in his book too, is we Americans like to experiment and see if a thing works or doesn't work. I would like to say the same thing to all our listeners. Try it out. You don't have to believe me, but give it a good try. Let's say for 10 days. See if your life doesn't change.
You just ask Divine Mother for guidance.
Yeah.
So, do you?
No, you don't have to think of God as a father or mother. You can think of him as a sacred crocodile. The thing is that God is the energy, the consciousness out of which all of us have been manifested. We're all a part of that. And the nature of God is, as an ancient sage in India put it, Satchidananda, which is to say, in Yogananda's translation, ever-existing, ever-conscious, ever-new bliss. And that ever-new is something absolutely thrilling. I had a dream years ago. It was in Florence, Italy. I'm always moving around. And in this dream, I saw thousands of people, and all of them were seeking bliss. And I realized that's what everybody in the world wants. Everybody wants to avoid pain and to find happiness. And the happiness that they're looking for is that bliss that is their own nature. And that's the reason for loving everybody in the world. Even the worst mafioso, basically, but deludedly, thinks he will find happiness through revenge, through money, through power, through all the things that he does. But everybody wants the same thing. Why? Because we are all manifestations of that bliss. And our hearts will never be satisfied until we find that bliss in ourselves. St. Augustine said, Lord, thou hast made us for thyself, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee.
Well, like celebrating life every day.
You know, I was celebrating life every day, Paula said. It's like celebrating life every day.
Yes. If you understand that life is divine, that God is not across over on the other side of some mountain, he's right behind your nearest thoughts.
You know, I wasn't going to share this story, but this morning something happened that was really amazing. And
I'd love to hear it.
Well, I was just waking up, and my eyes were still closed, and I got a vision that was kind of like a cloud that was starting to come up, and I thought, what is that? And then in the cloud, there were bubbles, and in the bubbles were many people's faces. And they were smiling, they were doing whatever. They were actually throwing little red hearts to me, and like kisses to me. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I mean, these were people I don't even know. And I'm thinking to myself, this must be happening. The veils are so thin, and that people from everywhere are really giving us all kinds of love and care from the other side, if we could just, you know that during this time, you know. And it was such a special vision.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, I did too.
That's a Valentine's vision.
It's a great blessing.
Yeah. Oh, it was really special. I couldn't believe it. You know how it was just like the Valentine grew bigger and kind of popped. And I'm thinking, I mean, really, it was very animated. And I'm going, that's amazing. I felt much gratitude. I was just giving thanks to our Divine Mother this morning before getting up. And then this happened. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that was just tremendous.
I think it's a true vision you had.
Swami, how much time do you meditate?
You know, I meditate all the time. I had a heart operation, open heart operation, a few years ago. And my body it doesn't allow me to meditate still. It just sort of throws my body around. But I can meditate mentally, and I can keep my thought on God. And I find that I can sit here without formal meditation and just enjoy God's presence. But other than that, it's very difficult for me. So I've had to, that's part of the reason I've worked so hard, to sort of compensate for this difficulty. To me, meditation was the most delightful thing. But when your heart is the way mine is, atrial fibrillation, it's not easy. Mm. Still, although I don't do it, I can't count the hours. I can say basically 24 hours a day I'm still meditating in some way.
Yeah, I bet
now,
you
in
are.
Your class, in your class, do you speak of meditation in your course that you're going to be teaching?
I do, indeed. And it's something I have practiced, but can't practice formally now. Yeah. And it's my great, great regret.
You're going to be the keynote speaker at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles.
Well, I guess you have to say I'll be one of them.
Right. So that's going to take a lot of energy.
Well, it's fine. I've got the energy when I need it.
So what are you going to be speaking about at the expo?
I have no idea. Do I just a minute? I have a secretary who's writing down something, and we'll see what she gives me here. Oh. No, I don't. I don't think I have in my mind. All right, here's, she wants to give me something here.
The topic,
okay. The goal of life is bliss. Well, that'll be easy to talk about. That's my topic.
So do you go without, I mean, do you prepare or do you just allow it to
I come never in? Prepare.
Oh, yeah. That's, you just allow it to come from.
It's given to me, you might say. And my favorite sessions are when people ask me questions. I have no chance to prepare anything, but always the answer has been given to me. And
so
I try to gear it. I try to answer my questions, people's questions, according to their consciousness, according to what they need. So I don't try to give them an answer that will satisfy me. I try to find one that will satisfy them. So that's why I used to, when I began, had a class to give, I used to sit and meditate and try to tune into the people as they were coming into the hall and ask, what do you need? What is your need? But now I don't need to do that so much. I just sort of feel it.
So when you go and speak in front of an audience, you just tune in to what that audience needs.
Well, I do. I try to, and I think I do it successfully. So no talk, whatever the topic, I never talk the same way twice.
Well, it's almost like you probably do. You just receive the information that's supposed to come in, and you're the vessel.
That's it.
And so what are your plans after February? Are you going to stay in Los Angeles and finish the film?
No, I've got a beautiful garden up in Ananda Village in outside Nevada City. And when my parents died, my dad had never given a dime to Ananda, and I didn't want his soul to suffer if I gave all my money to Ananda, all that I inherited from him. So I decided that I would do something that would help me, but the community also. And I built a spiritual center for the community there with a beautiful garden. And we have planted thousands of tulips. So every April, they have people coming from, many people, thousands of people come from everywhere to see these tulips, but I myself have never seen them. I've always been in Italy or India or somewhere. So this year I'm determined to go back there and see my own garden in the tulip season. So I'll be going there in April.
Well, that's not too far from my house. I'm glad you mentioned that. I will go up and see the tulips myself. That's wonderful.
Oh, you'll love them. And the garden itself is absolutely beautiful. We have a chapel there, too. Many people go there to get married. There was one couple just recently walked onto the land. They didn't know anything about us or who we were. They just happened to be walking, and they said, these are sacred grounds. And they ended up getting married in that chapel.
I have never been there, but the people in this area rave about Ananda in Nevada City, so I'm going to make sure that...
It's an ideal way of life. You find people by the hundreds living together harmoniously, helpfully, no competition. It's just, it gives you an idea of how humanity could be.
Well,
prerequisites before someone goes to live in the community.
I'm sorry?
What are the prerequisites that someone needs to have before they live in the community?
Requirements to live in the community.
The requirements, to be honest, I don't really know. You have to want God. You have to want this path. And beyond that, I know I'm the founder, but I've been withdrawn from the mechanics of it for quite a few years. So I can't really authoritatively say. I would say right there and find out. It's a very sort of a cop-out, but I have no choice in this case.
Well, I know that you can use their facilities for different types of groups go up and use their facilities.
Well, we have a retreat facility, and many people around the year come to that. And that way they're able to enjoy our way of life, learn our teachings, and decide whether they want to join or not.
That would be a good way to go. Well, let's tell everybody how to... look into the class that you're going to be doing online, so they can go. Our listeners can go to www.anandala.org. Is that where they would find out about your class?
That's right.
So that's
www.anandala.org.
And we've been talking with Swami Kirananda. Is that how you say your last name?
Well, thank you for asking. You got it pretty close, but it's Swami Kriyananda.
Kriyananda. Thank you.
Okay. Paul, I've enjoyed it.
Well, we'll let you go because we know that your energy might be going.
No, it's not at all, though. If you want to hang on, that's fine by me.
Well,
you have 5 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have a message perhaps you want to give our listeners?
I would say in everything you do, make your primary and ultimate and ulterior motive, all of them, make them the search for your own inner bliss.
Wow.
That's beautiful. And I'm thinking, I'm kind of going back to the question I asked you before, is, what is it like and what are the prerequisites to living in Ananda and maybe right action and, for everyone and working with themselves each day. And it's pretty amazing.
Now, people can go to the retreat and see if that's the kind of life they want and desire. So, now, your newest book, can people buy it from Ananda or where can
you? We can buy it in bookstores.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah. And it's won 2 major book awards, including the Eric Hoffer and some other. I'm not up on these things, but it's a very prestigious, even more prestigious award. Anyway, it's available mainline and or mainstream or whatever the word is. And I think that people will enjoy it, especially the part when after I meet Master, meet Yogananda. Nobody has written like that. And it helps to show people what it was like to live with him.
And the name of it is Who Lived Alongside Yogananda as a Disciple. I mean, what is the proper name of your book?
The New Path.
The New Path.
And My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda.
So we suggest people, our listeners, to buy The New Path because it sounds incredible. And we've been talking now to Swami. I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it correctly.
Kriyananda. Good, brave effort.
Well, yeah. We really enjoyed having you. You were a special guest.
I've enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Thank you. And recuperate in Hawaii quickly.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You can head to the Taz and Paula Show, .com, and be able to listen to the podcast there. And
Tweet us. I mean, on Twitter. That's and then we've got a Facebook too. So it's www.facebook.com/Taz and Paula. Show, right, Taz?
Yes. Oh my gosh! You know what? This has been such a wonderful time having Swami with us today, and
it was delightful.
It was, you know, such a gift to us. So God bless you all out there, and thank you for tuning in.
And live in bliss.
Absolutely.
Bye bye.
Have a wonderful week. Bye bye. We'll be back.